before we get started, I'd like to ask everybody to make sure your cell phones are on silent. Today's Tuesday, November 19th. It's 10:05. And I'd like to call the ADA board meeting to order. So, Quinn, if you would do a roll call of the board members, please.
Mr. Wilkins.
Here.
Commissioner Burnett. Oh, Mr. Pelosi.
Here.
Ms. Nygaard.
Here.
Mr. Hughes.
Here.
Mr. Bell.
Here.
Mr. Dick.
Here.
Mr. Pruth.
Here.
All present.
Thank you. And would you attempt to do a staff and public for us, Quinn?
Okay, we will go around the room doing staff and public together. As I point to you, please state your name and who you work for. And then we will go to the phone. Let's start over there in that corner.
Carson Rondrick, ADA.
Matt Harris, ADA. Chris Bard with HDR.
Joy Huntington, sub-consultant to HDR on this project.
Nick Smoniak, ADA.
Kathy Blackford, Torton Pittman, Shiro.
Bill Pittman for Torton.
Mark Gardner, Western Financial Group.
Steve Klein, Infrastructure.
Dave Damansky, Bracewell Giuliani.
Ted Leonard, ADA. Jerry Judea, Department of Law.
Mark Davis,
Chris Brown, WH. Captain Dodge, WSOW, SOW. Bob Stinson, IM, Treasury and Warren. Keegan, Spectrum
County. Doug Isaacson, representative from the report. Tim Bradman from the Congress. Jim Anderson,
and GTL. Joe Henry, Alaska citizen. Sir, if we should go to Alaska Energy Authority.
Team
Terry,
Alaska Energy Authority.
Mark Piero, Alaska Energy Authority.
Dan Redford, Fairbanks, Natural Gas, Pentex.
Henry Grubb, do you have any questions on behalf of Pentex?
Ray Latchell, Spectrum LNG.
John Davies, Fairbanks, Natural Borough Assembly.
Can we get those people on the phone in the Aspen room, please?
This is Stuart Osgood with Dallas Cam.
Kendall Gee, Dallas Cam.
Rick Kessinger, Modesto.
Jack, will you keep controlling these?
Okay, can we get any other public on the phone at this time?
Jomo Stewart, Fairbanks Economic Development Corporation.
Gallagher, HDR Alaska.
Shannon Lashman, Spectrum LNG.
Alan Shepard, NEI.
Sounds like that's it there.
Thank you, Chris. Our next on the agenda is the approval of the agenda.
Chairman, I'll move the agenda.
Second.
Any opposed? The agenda is approved before us. You also see item number five, prior minutes for October 1st, 2013. Thank you. Look at those.
Remove adoption of the minutes for October 1.
I second.
Any opposed? They're adopted. Item number six, under new business. I will ask Ken Leonard to guide us through this.
Thank you, Chair. Today, we are going to be giving a review of the IEP project. Specifically, we are going to be giving information to the board on the LNG facility. And at this time, Chair, I'd like to ask Mark Davis to go over the process and invite Mark Gardner up here to give a review of the IEP project overall.
All right. Mark?
So, good morning. For the record, my name is Mark Davis. I'm Deputy Director of ADA. And I've been assigned to the Interior Energy Project. And this morning, the board is meeting to hear an overview and about the process that's focused on one aspect of that project, which is the development and construction of an LNG plant on the North Slope. That plant would provide LNG that would then be trucked to the interior for use by utilities and other industrial users in the interior. So even though the Interior Energy Project has several components, today we're going to be focusing on how we're looking at the development and of the plan within the design of SB 23. SB 23, as you know, is what the legislature and the governor provided data for this particular project. And again, as an overview, it is composed of three items. One is a set sustainable energy transmission supply loan in the amount of $125 million. That's based on appropriation from the legislature for that amount. Second, an appropriation that was taken from the current SETS funding and transferred to ADA's revolving fund in the amount of $57.5 million. And so that was not GF money, that was money from ADA's existing accounts. And finally, the legislature and SB 23 authorized $150 million of bonds that could be issued for the project. But today, we're focused on the process of the plan development. And as the agenda says, we'd like to hear from Mark Gardner. Mark Gardner is with Western Financial and has been a long-term financial advisor to ADA. And Mark has been involved with the process from its initiation. The governor signed SB 23 on May 29th, and then we started off. So I'd like to, if the commission board, turn it over to Mark. Oh, one other item, I guess, for the agenda. We have participants on the agenda listed as participants 1, 2, and 3. The order we'd like to bring them up before you, with your permission, would be Pentec, Spectrum LNG LLC, and then NWH.
All right. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you. Sure.
Mr. Chair, members of the board, I am Mark Gardner with Western Financial Group, and you have a an overview. In your overview tab there is the outline of the following. I'll try to get through this expeditiously for you. I want to start with a description of the process, which started in January when we received responses back to our request for letters of interest. And we did get a fair number of responses back and started evaluating those. The legislation that presented the policy basis for our activities went on through April of 2013, and at the same time we were doing a technical review. The purpose of the technical review was first to determine whether the concept of an LNG plant on the North Slope and trucking to the Fairbanks North Star Borough was technically viable. That work was conducted by HDR and NEI in conjunction with an ADA and AEA team. And an analysis of options and a recommended architecture for the overall system, balancing LNG plant technology and capacity in the North Slope, trucking capacity, and then storage and regas capacity in the Fairbanks North Slope. And we probably don't have time to get into that today, but there is a balancing that goes on there that is reflected in the technical plans now. As Mark said, Senate Bill 23 was signed by the governor on May 29th. When we really got into the process of working with potential sponsors for the North Slope LNG plant. And in June, we issued a request for proposals based on the technical review and using the financial tools that were made available by SB 23. We received those responses then in July, and since that time there have been ongoing analysis of proposals and parallel negotiations with those sponsors, which is part of what got us here today. The team involved with that were the ADA Development Finance and Infrastructure Divisions, AEA, particularly for issues related to the distribution system, storage, things like that in the Fairbanks North Star Borough, as well as energy policy and things like individual house conversions. The technical team, which was HDR and MEI, who are LNG specialists, and we have some HDR people here and on the phone, and we have MEI people on the phone as well. And then legal and regulatory, the Department of Law, Gary Birch Horton, and Bracewell Giuliani have all been advising on this process. And finally, my company, Western Financial Group, is the financial advisors, along with Steve Klein's group, which is the SETS advisor. A little bit here about our background, just kind of the reason why I'm here. as Mark said, we're a longtime advisor to ADA, and we've been very much involved in project finance and public-private financing over the years, both as an advisor and as a developer and sponsor of project financings. And I also served as an institutional investor. I was on the Oregon Investment Council for 8 years, which is the board that invests the OPERS, about $60 billion portfolio. Prior to that, as the Chief Administrative Officer of the City of Portland, I was actually the utility executive responsible for overseeing the activities of the city's large utilities. My focus here is to do large, complex, successful transactions. Our Senate Bill 23 objectives are to get natural gas to Fairbanks, North Star boroughs facing customers at furniture prices that are substantially below fuel oil costs. Provide a long-term assured supply for preferred customers. We'll talk about the preferred customers in a minute. Liquefied natural gas for interior Alaska electric utilities and industrial uses, and propane for rural areas. So that was our mandate, Senate Bill 23. Mark mentioned already the funding structure with the capital appropriation, ZETS loan, and the AIA bonds. That's all then devoted to the interior energy project program elements, which, starting from the north, include the gas supply source, the LNG plant, trucking, storage and regasification in the Fairbanks North Star borough, heating distribution utilities, the electric utilities, and then industrial customers in the interior. And that hierarchy of preferred customers follows the list that I talked about before. So first, the Fairbanks North Star borough, space heating gas utilities, Fairbanks North Star electric utilities, then other regulated utilities outside the Fairbanks North Star borough, and then industrial customers in the Fairbanks North Star borough, and actually the rest of interior Alaska. So that's what we're trying to achieve. The LNG plant is a portion of that, and what we're principally focused on today. And the plant consists of a site on the North Slope, which involves lease, design, layout, permitting, a lot of which is underway already. A pad on that site, which is the, for want of a better term, the foundation on which the plant will sit. A pipeline and connection to the fuel gas system on the North Slope, maintenance shops, a camp, and power generation, raw gas processing. Fuel gas has to have the natural gas separated before it goes into the liquefaction process. So that's what that amine plant or the separation plant is. Liquefaction trains, so each unit that develops, that liquefies the natural gas is called a train. Some level of on-site storage to be able to flex the feeding the trucks that take the fuel down, and then truck loading facilities. That's what we're talking about on this slope. So now I'll shift to how do the business and financial structures achieve the Senate Bill 23 objectives. So how do we get to use the financing tools we've got, business commercial structures, to achieve the fuel going to the Fairbanks North Star borough at low benefit prices. First of all, our technical team spent a lot of time working on what are the minimum plant requirements. And again, we're talking about balancing the LNG plant, trucking, and storage and regas to reach that. Making sure that there's a commitment to distribution system build out with an all requirements agreement. So we need to make sure that if we can produce the gas and truck it, that there's going to be utilities there that are able to distribute that gas out to the space heating customers, in particular in Fairbanks North Star borough. Because this is a big public project, transparency is an important criterion that we used in evaluating the business structures. Effectively leveraging state and ADA financing with the use of private capital. Part of our mandate was to be sure that there was private capital involved in the project on the North Slope. Making sure that we write into everything we do the customer priorities, so again, those preferred customers. Writing into our business structures, return limits and pricing restrictions, again, to meet the furnished price. So it's not just a front of the market process that we're doing. It's designed to make sure that we meet those pricing objectives. And then we have a couple of other business covenants. The way we characterize that expression of private equity was that we have a minimum of $20 million required as the equity coming from the private project sponsor, and that we needed to have build-out commitments by the utilities. So our goal here, then, using all of those tools, is to build a prudent and effective business structure with project financing characteristics. So a number of the participants in this project, myself and the other advisors and the lawyers, are come at this from the perspective of what's called project finance, which is a purely commercial structure, which includes managing things so that you have managed technical and construction risk, you have creditworthiness that's appropriate by all the parties and balance sheet commitments, large proven markets, you have term match commitments. So ideally, in a project financing, you'd have all of the various obligations that the parties have be on the same term to make sure that everybody's there for the whole project. A balanced risk allocation among the parties, and that would encompass all the program elements. So again, starting from the gas supply source right down to the utilities and industrial customers. We don't have a pure project financing here. What we have instead is something that has some interesting elements of project finance with some other characteristics that make it necessary for there to be the state investment in this project. So we have a full system resource for the final customer, but we have some challenges. We have an unproven natural gas market in the Fairbanks North Star Borough. We have pricing and customer priority policy objectives, which are not commercial, so they work against the project management. And then probably overhanging the whole thing is that we have the potential of an alternative gas supply in the form of one or the other of the pipelines, or maybe gas from a different location that make a pure project financing not possible. So what we've done to meet the policy objectives, to build an effective and prudent business structure then, is to start with what would look like a project financing, but then use the state's and ADA's financial and business support to cover those risks that aren't typically there in a pure project financing. So that's the context for the commercial discussions. And I want to, just before we go into the key elements of the term sheets, I want to talk a little bit about the technical fundamentals, because they do play a little bit into the business side as well. So the Pentex, MWH, and GBA plant proposals and designs are all essentially the same type of plant and design and configuration. They're electrically driven nitrogen refrigerant processes. Which, among other things, means that they have a pretty large electrical generation system on site, because that creates the electrical power that then actually drives the nitrogen refrigerant process. The Spectrum plant is a different type. It's a direct drive mixed refrigerant process, which does not use electrical power to move the refrigerant, but instead uses turbines that are gas fed. It's a lower capital cost and has a different operating profile, which factors in some of the business side. For what it's worth, our technical team's analysis favors the nitrogen over mixed refrigerant. After a lot of work by our technical team, the conclusions are that we're now talking about just two sites which are very close and very similar characteristics. So the sites really aren't a factor. And the conclusion of the technical team is that either the electric drive nitrogen refrigerant or the direct drive mixed refrigerant process could meet the ADA and AE system requirements. So that's not a determinative factor in the analysis. So now moving on to...
Excuse me, Mark, I was going to stop right there anyway and see if any board members... Gary?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mark, before you move on, I'd like you to go to page 3, first bullet, starting with how business. Would you take the word transparency and expand on that a bit and tell and help me with what that means in this project and what components are important in the project to provide the goal of transparency? Please.
I guess, Mr. Wilkin, the transparency really covers a number of areas. One, as I said, this is a public project. We have, you know, almost $300 million of public funds here. So there's a mandate that, that there be a level of transparency that there wouldn't be with a purely private project. So there's a desire to have full information on what project capital costs are, what operating budgets for the plants are, and the structure and nature of returns, and the hierarchy of those returns, and the, what we call the waterfall and cash flow in project. So those are from the more the public side, from a project financing side. In order to reach an agreement and move ahead with the project financing, we have to have visibility to transparency to the sources of funding, the timing and nature of how those funds are going to come in from the private side. We do due diligence, considerable due diligence on the other participants as they do on us. So it's transparency to a pretty deep level of understanding of the, you know, who the parties are, where the funding is coming from, the nature of the commitment funding, things like that.
If I'm right there. So that gets us up to first gas. The issue of transparency, how does it flow through after first gas?
It flows through in the what we have written into our standards and our policies related to ensuring that we are getting the lowest price possible for those priority preferred customers that we talked about. So we have written into our policies the requirement that there be transparency about all the costs of the system, and then how those flow through to burner tip price. So there's no black boxes.
So in essence, Chair, if I could just add, then that comes back to when we were talking with the borough a month ago or so about price transparency, that our customers will know how the price is built, what type of rate of return is built into the price of the gas coming out of the plant.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Anybody else have any questions?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just curious, and recognizing that you made the statement that all plant proposals can meet the requirements, I'm curious, is your basis for favoring the nitrogen process versus the mixed refrigerant?
I might have to defer to the technical team, but I'll give it a shot, and they'll correct me if I'm wrong. It essentially, it relates to the ability to match the operations of the plant to the seasonal swings of LNG demand. Is that fair?
There's a couple of reasons.
Chair,
state your name, full name, your record, please.
Yes, this is just Doug with HDR. The selection, as we, Mark has pointed out, there's two different plant designs, both of which meet the objectives of the project. However, when you get into the details of different options, the technical team felt that some of the risks associated with the different refrigerants, which is flammable, slightly more operations intensive, as well as having different turn down efficiency for the overall plant, were some of the factors that led to the recommendation that nitrogen cycle be further explored and pursued.
I have one question on that. Between both operating systems, are they widely used throughout the world, in the LNG world? Are they is one more advantageous for northern latitudes operation versus the other one?
Yes, both systems are widely used throughout the industry. Neither are novel technologies. Well vetted with lots of experience of each.
In the Arctic environment?
There are limited, you know, northern plants. There's two in this region, a few in Norway. But as far as both should be operationally neutral with respect to the Arctic environment.
And I believe, Chris, that several of the plants use both type of technologies in the north too.
Right? Yes, sir.
Okay, so in the Arctic environment, there's no differential between the field, both work?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any other questions from the board? Okay, come on, go ahead, Mark.
Okay. So now moving to the key elements of the final term sheets we received. First of all, Gold Valley sent in a letter with their latest how they would like to participate. As you probably know, they've had some issues up there that they're working on, getting caught back on, so they asked us to send their apologies if they couldn't be here. They did send a letter with their proposal, and it's important that the key element of that is that the Golden Valley has said that they are willing to purchase gas from any project sponsor. And I quoted the letter there to make it clear what they were saying, that depending upon an agreed upon fixed price that is commercially reasonable, PVA envisions being able to commit to purchasing between 1.5 to 2.5 billion cubic feet of gas annually. They are also willing to assist, as I said over and over again, that they're willing to assist any way they can. And then specifically, that includes assigning rights to their engineering work product from work that they did on a North Slope plant, which is very similar. It is an electric drive nitrogen refrigerant design, which is similar to the other designs. Assigning their rights to North Slope site, a consent to the project using GVA's 20-year gas supply contract, contributing project management and grant administration expertise, and then possibly participating in project development and facility operation. So although GVA is not proposing to be a sponsor of North Slope plant, they are proposing to be a significant participant in the program overall. Next then, and these are not in any particular order, by the way. Next then, the Spectrum. This Spectrum's business structure is oriented to distributing LNG beyond the Fairbanks North Star borough. With ADIS really securing a lower cost gas supply and the committed demand in the Fairbanks North Star borough.
Mark, when you say committed demand, could you expound on that a little bit?
Yes, sir.
That, take sure,
that will come through as I go through this, this a little bit more. Spectrum proposes to sell processing of the LNG at the plant, which is a little bit different than the other proposals and what we have been contemplating, where the plant enterprise would actually buy the fuel gas, process it, and sell the LNG. The Spectrum structure is designed to sell processing services at the plant, where each customer would secure their own gas supply contract, and the Spectrum plant would process the gas for a fee. Spectrum is proposed to have the completion risk covered and the construction financing provided by Quanta. And the ADA financing is only required after plant completion, although there is still a clause in there that we might refund some equipment acquisition. They're willing to transfer their site permits for a project to the project for a fee of $2.85 million, plus a reimbursement of Spectrum expenses, including a $2,500 a day management fee with a 15% margin on those expenses. Their plant proposal has the lowest capital cost for the construction of an LNG plant. Their term sheet includes a request for a breakup fee of $2.25 million plus reimbursement of expenses and a 15% margin added. That would come into play if there was a decision to move ahead and then with them exclusively, and then it didn't achieve the planned closing in March of 2014. And as a part of that breakup fee, they've also proposed that they would have a an option to buy 20,000 gallons per day of capacity of a plant that that might get built. And this is next one, Chair, is where you get to answer your question, which is that Spectrum's proposal really contemplates that ADA would take the demand risk. So it proposes that Spectrum would have the option between years 5 and 10 to put one of the LNG trains to ADA. In other words, say, okay, we're, that demand that you said you would bring us ADA has not been working. So you're going to take that train and you're going to reduce our debt owed on the SEX loan by $72 million on then outstanding balance. So that's the how we're taking the demand risk. Their proposed return on the $20 million equity is approximately is the highest of the proposers, and it works out to about 25% nominal rate. And their interim management fee payments before completion and the right to use ADA funds before using Spectrum capital. Again, I talked about that earlier. So that's the Spectrum. And these, as we got these, to the point of having these final three term sheets, it became clear that these are actually quite different proposals. So the Spectrum proposal, I said, is oriented to a larger LNG market with the ADA side being focused on the Fairbanks Harbor Borough piece. MWH's proposal is really a financial investor oriented proposal with the added element of having MWH there as the owner's engineer and project manager. And it really has terms closer to pure project financing. And they have no, unlike the other proponents here, they have no contractor team identified. So they're at a different stage of development of the plan. And being more of a project financing oriented proposal, it does have those elements that I talked about earlier. So all agreements being 30-year term. Their approach is proposing that we would phase construction to meet demand. In shorthand, that would mean you start with one or two trains instead of three, and then build more as the demand was proved up. They did say that they would commit their funding for that expansion at the front end. But I don't think it would be prudent to fund until the demand is approved. The term sheet capital operating costs that MWH proposed are the highest of the proposers, and it's really because they're using our highest cost estimates from our engineering studies and the feasibility study, since they haven't done the independent work on the project plan. So that's not really an independently derived number. Those are our numbers for our highest estimate. They have a mid-range proposed return on their capital, and they propose a range between 12-15%. Being at the lower end of that range, the closer that we get to something that looks like a project financing. They propose the highest potential private capital commitment of $85 million. And their term sheet includes a commitment of $10 million of the capital appropriation to the GBA storage and regasification facility in North Pole. That leads to a commitment for a take or pay from GBA. Now, if you look at the GBA letter and you look at the language that's in the term sheet, the MWH term sheet, you see that's conditional. We need to make clear that GBA is not signing up today for a take or pay. But what they've said is that on certain conditions, they would be willing to give the customer to take or pay. And that's reflected in the MWH term sheet. So that package is, from MWH, is a sort of project financing oriented approach to the North Star or the North Slope plant, plus a commitment for funding of the storage and regas facility in North Pole, linked up to a GBA commitment for buying the gas and going to that facility.
Mark, is there any threshold that GBA has indicated that there that needs to be attained in order to
pricing?
Yeah.
They have not put a threshold in pricing on paper. We have talked to them about the alternative cost of generation, and that the prices we're talking about would be attractive as a, an alternative source for them to generate. So
okay.
That's what gives us some confidence that there's likely demand there. Finally, the Dentex plan, again, these are all different. The Dentex plan is oriented to the Fairbanks North Star Borough as heating market with a planned sideline for transportation fuels. So they do think that there's an LNG market beyond the Fairbanks North Star market, but they're really focused first on the on that market. And the term sheet, therefore, integrates that into the plan, so they are they would be a sponsor, an investor, builder, and operator of the North Slope LNG plant, but also included in that term sheet are commitments to build out the distribution system for the sale of gas from the space heating market in the Fairbanks North Slope Borough, and to purchase gas what's called all requirements. In other words, they would commit to use the LNG from this plant to serve all requirements for gas, and a effectively what's a take or pay is a different name in the term sheet, but that commitment to take a minimum amount of that that gas from the plant. Now, the proposal to build up the distribution system includes a commitment by ADA to help finance that system. As you know, we have $150 million authorized in bonds for that purpose, as well as some of the sets loans. So those obligations are matched. Build out the commitment system with some financing from ADA. They assume an economic regulation type structure, although the plant wouldn't be under RCA regulation. They assume that the way the costs would be applied and the returns calculated would be like that. And their proposed equity return is the lowest of the options we have at the proposed 12.5%. Dentex expects to raise funds beyond the $15 million in new cash equity in the capital markets and propose a end of 2014 deadline for that funding. So it has some implications for how the funding flows between ADA and Dentex. And they also have, in the $20 million, they're counting $5 million of already expended funds and funds of advancing their plan and just along with their plans that we have. So that's the quick summary of the background three term sheets plus the TBA letter. And now, questions on that?
Don't know how far we explore this, but who takes the risk on operation of the plant, the availability, the reliability of the plant?
We're assuming that the project sponsor overall would take that responsibility. They have each proposed to operate the plant. The vendors of the equipment have varying levels of warranty on the actual equipment.
Right.
And there might well be a wrap around that depending on the project structure, but we're assuming that the project sponsors have the responsibility for making sure the plant is operated appropriately and efficiently. And our development agreements would incorporate provisions requiring that and having remedies if that didn't occur.
Okay.
Okay. I'm going to move on to the tab that is the financial model analysis. in this process over the months that I described before. Data, with assistance from the AEA, developed a pretty comprehensive model for the overall program. Nick Shimoniak, who you all know, is happens to be a utility economist, and is the head of ZEDS program. So he's the author and owner of that model. It has been compared to the proponents' models as well. And so we've done some testing and come up with the same answers, which is often encouraging. And as Nick can tell you, if you'd like to get into that, he's done a lot of different scenarios. For the purpose of analyzing the financial implications of the term sheets we have, we came up with a set of common assumptions, which are listed here on the first page behind that tab. So the sets loan is structured to include principal but no interest for the first 5 years. Prices are levelized, in other words, an average over the first 5 years. Those are both very important in making sure that when we enter that space heating market, the prices are low enough to drive conversion. Because if you just went with the cost versus a very small customer base to start with, you'd have a very high Burlington price and never get past the chasm there. While all the term sheets require an expandable plant, this analysis assumes that there are no expansions, so it's the nameplate nine BCF plant to begin with. We're assuming for this analysis that the first $35 million of AIDA investment comes from the capital appropriation, which is effectively equity and doesn't require a return. All the SES funds then that are not used for the NLG plant are available to be used in the distribution system to replace higher cost debt. So to the extent that we can use either remaining capital appropriation funding or SES loan, the 3% money, we're reducing the cost of the required investment in the distribution system. And we're assuming for purposes of this analysis that the LNG is trucked using diesel tractors, which is higher cost, rather than LNG tractors, which are not there yet. So that's just a, you may have seen lower cost per MCF for transportation in earlier versions of our analysis. That's just the reason why it's even higher here. So those are true of all the machines.
Sorry. Hey, Mark, just to be clear, the SES funds that could be used for the distribution system would also be leveraged 5 years, no interest. Okay.
Yes, for the SES loan portion, we have lots of flexibility about pushing off principal interest. And, it's very, very flexible.
How about storage, LNG storage?
Same.
Okay.
Pretty much, excuse me, Chair, on the SETS loan and SB 23, it pretty much ties it to can be used for the North Slope production facility and for the distribution system in interior Alaska. So it's broad, very broad, and being able to use for storage or pipe or any of those type of capital needs for a interior gas distribution system.
Trucking excluded.
Trucking, I'd sort of have to look at the AG, whether trucking equipment.
Trucking is not described in SB 23.
It isn't. We'd have to get
use another program.
Right.
Okay.
So those are the assumptions that are common to all of the term sheet analyses, and then there are some that are specific to each one. And we don't need to go through all these. I will highlight just a couple of points that I talked already about the projected rates of return for each of them. Those are reflected here. The term of payback is reflected in here. Couple of other features, but basically it's just what the proposals have for the how much investment is made, the term of the return, and the amount of return. So then if you go to page 2, Mark, go ahead.
Let's just point out the differences between the assumptions.
So the operating costs are different. As you see, index is $6.5 million. The spectrum purchase assumes $9 million. And the MWH is about $9 million. They have different requirements for fuel gas. So that if you note on spectrum, they have higher non-fuel cost of index, but they use 6% fuel gas versus 5%. And again, that's a difference of using different processing system. And again, just the rate of return that's proposed is different than the differential. So those are the primary differences. What's called the capital stack there on table 1 on page 2 reflects those assumptions we talked about. So we have $35 million of ADA equity contribution.
Excuse me, it doesn't have to be, I would just say contribution, Mark. It doesn't have to be equity.
Excuse me, contribution, not equity. Then the ADA sets loan portion, and as you can see, that varies. Private debt and private equity are the last two items there. So that provides the basis for the capital costs. And then we have projections for the operating costs for each system. Then we turn to demand. The next section shows the demand. So it includes, it assumes industrial customers, including GVA, at 3 BCF per year. And then as you see, the natural gas utilities start at 1.9 and goes to 3.3. Again, this is for purposes of analyzing the differences in the results.
Mark, could I just very quickly board again, I just want to stress what Mark is saying, that this is just based to do this analysis. We do believe if demand and conversions go the way that we believe they could, if you remember that curve we had, that you could have to or need to expand the plant in 2017 or 2018 with another train.
Right.
And that's why we have the requirement in the term sheets or in our proposal that the plant be expandable to add more of those trains when needed. Okay, sorry, Mark.
Right. So this, as the note here says, the 6.3 here, which we get to in 2017, is just a little below the actual annual capacity of the 9 BCF nameplate plant. So, if it grew beyond this, then we would need to expand. But for purposes of this analysis, we're not assuming we expand.
Mark, you on the table 2, it talks about industrial, including GVA. So there's 500. 0.5 BCF from a different industrial user. Is there an assumption who that is or what that is? Is it just a number?
No, sir, there's not an assumption about who that is. And in fact, some of the analysis that GVA has done has them at 3 BCF. So I made it a little bit uncertain. But there are industrial and commercial customers that can take that institution.
UAF, is there anything with that?
We're not assuming that. Just for purposes of this analysis, we're assuming we get to 3 BCF or outside the space heating market.
Okay. Barry?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So LNG 101, so help me, if you have a 9 BCF plant, you only get 6.6 out of it? Where does the other 2.4 go?
For the record, Nick Schmoyak with ADA. What we're assuming here, based on the analysis of our technical team, is that the most cost-effective way of providing that seasonal swing, that winter capacity for LNG, is not with building out storage and running the plant at full capacity to use the storage swing. Instead, it's more cost-effective to size the plant up a bit and use liquefaction capacity to meet the seasonal swing. So what we're seeing here with that 9 BCF plant producing 6.3 in the table, 6.6 in the test, excuse me, for that, is essentially we're leveraging that excess plant capacity or extra plant capacity to meet the seasonal swing. So the 2.4 BCF that's missing would be unused capacity during the warm months.
Oh, I see. Okay. So you could do 9 BCF, including fuel gas, if you needed to.
Yes.
I'm with you. Okay, thank you.
And there could be some advantages down the line if there's some markets in transportation or other that you could sell that excess capacity and lower the cost of, for everyone.
Okay. But we're assuming you only sell the 6.3 years.
Okay.
The next page then provides the estimates of costs. And you, as you'll see, the raw gas we're assuming is the same for all. There are some differences in fuel gas, which again relates to the how the systems work, and operating costs based on the projections by the sponsors. The SETS loan payments are different, again, because they use different amounts of SETS loan, and the return on the private investment is different depending on how much and the rate of return there. But those are then rolled up to annual costs. Then in Table 4, those costs plus the rest of the costs get used to create the full cost picture. So you add in the trucking and distribution costs, and those roll down into the Table 5, the last line of which is the at the meter or the burn tip price. So there's the cost of the plant, the cost delivered, and then at the meter.
Mark, could I just very quickly, Chair, at one point Mark did say that under our assumptions that if the monies were not needed at the plant, they would substitute higher priced capital on the distribution side. And that's why on Table 4, the last thing you see on distribution, does have different costs for the distribution based on, for example, one of the potential participants would only be needing to use $85 million of the SETS funds, so 40 could go towards the distribution system, which is a lower cost capital than you would need. So that's where that difference in cost of capital for the plant shows up in the overall cost of the system.
Okay. Thank you.
Nothing that you've shown us so far is driven by the length of the time the plant would be in service. Right. So if it stayed in service for 1 month, 1 year, or 20 years, the numbers we're looking at don't change.
Well, I guess I would put the shortest time on there is 5 years, just because that's we're levelizing over 5 years.
Okay. But beyond that, it's not, the work you've done is not time dependent.
No, it's not.
Okay.
And then on the last page, you see Nick's model has translated those costs into the effect on household fuel costs and savings there. You see the, at the bottom, this assumes a 190 cubic feet of gas annually per household, and it's comparing to fuel oil costs of $4 a gallon, which is the equivalent of $30 per million cubic feet, and includes all costs to deliver gas to the meter. So this is based on those prices that were on the previous page at the meter. And not surprisingly, $15 or $16 is quite a bit less than $30.
Any questions? Gary?
Just for the record, I called my fuel distributor this morning and asked what fuel is going for today. And below ground tank, $3.84. Frame of reference.
Any more questions from the board? Mark?
Thank you, Mark. Thank you, Nick.
Chair, we're actually moving faster than we are. So I guess, would you like to go directly into inviting out the potential participants?
I think we should take a break.
Take a break first, and then
well, we'll take 10 minutes.